This episode contains topics that may be triggering for some listeners. Welcome to Tell Us Where It Hurts, a conversational podcast around health, well-being, and the many ways people across Central Indiana are offering a helping hand. I'm Chris Kirshner, and in this very special season, we continue to examine the opioid epidemic through the eyes of one man named Kelly, who's in long-term recovery from substance use disorder. In our last episode, Kelly spoke about his unsuccessful recovery attempts and how a series of decades-long rock-bottom moments with family, friends, and his own personal well-being drove him to get the help he needed.
What do you think was the biggest influence, the biggest motivator in getting you to where you are now? Was it the action of this probation officer or your friends letting you have a place to crash, or was it just within you?
I just couldn't bear what my life had become anymore. I couldn't stand the fact that my kids didn't want to have anything to do with me. You know, and when I first came in to sober living, neither one of them wanted to speak to me, and I don't blame them a bit. And the difference this time was the willingness. And I use that word so much. If I give a lead, if I'm talking to anybody in recovery, is, you know, I had nothing to lose. I knew that I was ready. I knew I was ready to take that challenge. I decided I was going to take the counselor's advice. I was going to ask questions. I was going to do what was asked of me. I had the willingness to want to change my life because I wanted to be a better person. And so I come up here and I go to detox, and I'm attending all the group sessions and all the meetings, and I'm asking questions, and I find out about a sober living program. And a gentleman comes over and talks to me while I'm in detox, and goes over the application with me and said, you know, welcome aboard. You're more than welcome to come stay with us.
Sober living programs bridge the transition period from rehabilitation to independent living. They offer those in recovery a living space where they can maintain their sobriety away from the substance, while also providing a built-in community full of peer support. Now, this helps tenants develop new routines, habits, and coping mechanisms. Kelly had lived in Terre Haute his entire life before moving into sober living in Indianapolis. In order to get a new, fresh start, he had to leave behind everything he'd ever known. Kelly continued to speak with me about the uncertain road ahead in a new city.
It was very scary. The whole ordeal was scary. I knew nobody in Indianapolis. I was on my own. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, all I could do was try to stay optimistic and try to keep a good perspective on what the future may hold for me. So yeah, I came into sober living, and my coordinator, he pulled me off to the side and he said, Kelly, you need a sponsor. You need a sponsor, and you need to work steps, dude. That's what you need to do. So I started attending meetings every night, and I think I'd been living in sober living probably 3 weeks, and I attended a meeting Thursday night at IBG. It's a wonderful meeting here in Indianapolis, Indianapolis Beginners Group. And when they asked if anybody was willing to sponsor, I seen this guy raise his hand. I could tell he's about my age. I don't know, just the vibe was there. And I just knew that was my guy. And so I approached him after the meeting and introduced myself and asked for his phone number. And he said, call me every day. He said, check in with me every day and we'll go from there. So that's what I did.
How much did it help for you to have that accountability? Because it sounds like that's nothing you ever had, right?
Even as
a young child, you didn't really, right. You weren't accountable to anybody.
Right. It made all the difference.
While Kelly continued to make progress within his recovery program, he also gained a friend and mentor, Brett Schopp, who's the volunteer and alumni coordinator with Community Fairbanks Recovery Center. We wanted to hear more about Kelly's recovery process from Brent, who has his own history with alcohol misuse and has made it his mission to help guide others on their roads to recovery. As we walked through the front door, we immediately caught sight of Brent in the main lobby working at the coffee shop.
Large or small?
Large.
Cream or sugar?
Sugar.
That customer waiting in line for a coffee revealed that she was 30 days sober and then asked Brent about a volunteer position.
I would like to volunteer for this.
All right, I would like to let you.
Okay.
Text me your email address.
Okay.
And I will email you the application, and we'll kind of go back and forth, and then we'll hook up probably next week and see what you want to do.
All right, thank you.
Congratulations on 30 days. That's awesome.
It is awesome.
And that's how we get new volunteers.
After Brent's shift at the coffee shop, he took us upstairs to a support group meeting room. There, Brent sat down with us to share information about recovery programs and how they're essential in helping those seeking recovery, as well as the observations he made about Kelly's own experience with recovery.
I'm a firm believer that it's not who has the most years, it's you know, who got up earliest this morning. That's really who has the most sobriety on any given day. And that's how I kind of view Kelly. Kelly has taught me a lot. I watched him come through detox, through a residential program, inpatient, go through outpatient, go through recovery management. And early on in that, you know, he wanted to volunteer. He worked the coffee shop 3 times a week for 6 months. Kelly was one where I would tell him, hey, you need to back off a little bit. I know you want to volunteer every day, but you need to balance your life. And so we have those kinds of conversations. We talk about him meeting a sponsor, and we talk about the meetings he's going to. He helped start a meeting on Fridays at noon in this room. So we have an outside AA meeting that meets every Friday at noon, and Kelly was one of them that helped start it. So just conversing through those events in his life and becoming friends, that's ultimately what happens in recovery. Most of my friends today are in recovery, but that's because I spend most of my time there. And that's the way it was with Kelly. We hit it off personally. We have some things in common, and you just get to know each other. And there's, you know, not that Kelly's not special, because I think Kelly is a great example of what to do right. Just watching Kelly and how he's done the right things has just been inspiring.
He's an example of what to do right. What did he do right?
He did what he was told. So when you come into a facility like this, there is an easier, softer way, and it's the 12 steps of recovery. It's about surrendering and being honest and being open-minded to new things. And those of us in active addiction tend to fight that. One, we're oppositionally defiant. So if you tell me to go left, I'm going to go right just because. That's how it works. And Kelly, I think the first couple times through was like that. You know, they'll make recommendations. You should go to residential. You should go to outpatient services. We want to spend a year with you during that journey with programming that we have, because we know it works. And I think Kelly was at a point where he'd had enough. And, you know, they said, jump, and he jumped. They said, go. You need to go to residential, and here's why. And he did, and he stayed. And they said, you should move into recovery housing, and here's why. And he did, and he stayed. You need to show up for your recovery management sessions once a week, which is kind of the follow-on thing where it's very loose, but it's an accountability. And to show up every week and be held accountable for things, not only in recovery, but in life. Hey, did you apply for that job because you said you were going to? Yes, I did. Kelly was all in on all of that. He took suggestions. He was honest about how he felt. You know, his sponsor said, we're going to meet every Tuesday at 10 o'clock and go through the steps. And he showed up. That's not common. Usually we know better. You know, I got myself into this mess. I can get myself out of this mess. And so taking suggestions like that is just not something we see every time. Usually it takes people 2 or 3 times of trying it their way before they realize, hey, maybe they were right. Maybe they had something here. I'll go back and do it their way. And that's what's been so cool with Kelly is, you know, if somebody suggests something that is going to improve his recovery, he doesn't question it. He just does it. And as a result, he's got this wonderful life today. He's employed. You know, he's in a happy relationship. He's learned how to have relationships, which is something we in addiction struggle with. And that all comes down to taking suggestions. He was honest about how he was feeling. He'd talk about it. He would let people give him input, and he took that input.
But he didn't do that the first time around. He had mentioned that he tried once And he admitted that I didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't work for me because I didn't do it.
Yeah.
But it did the second time around.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not his fault. You know, this is a disease, and his thinker is broken. And so he thinks in wrong ways. The substance we choose has little to do with the addiction. It's how we view the world. It's how we view ourselves. It's how we respond to outside stimuli. I have a friend who says, I have an illogical response to outside stimuli. You know, if I'm in a car accident, I'm cool as a cucumber. But if I break a nail, the day is over. We're literally done. I'm going home. And that's the way we think. So Kelly may not have been capable of being honest. When I first came around recovery and they said, well, you need to be honest, open-minded, and willing. And I said, okay, yeah, I got that. I had no idea what those words meant. No clue. Because I'd never had to. I didn't trust anybody. I was pretty successful in life. I had a good job. Until the alcohol took all that away. We're overall pretty bright people. Kelly's pretty smart. And he was pretty successful when he put his mind to things. So when you hit this roadblock of addiction, your first thought is, well, I can solve this problem. I got myself into this mess. I can get myself out of it.
Is there sometimes a sense of guilt with that too, where you say, I got myself into this mess. I put other people in this situation because I'm in this mess. I need to get myself out.
I would say that could play into it, definitely. You know, I had guilt around my now ex-wife and my daughters. Tons of guilt that I'd got myself into this mess. And then you start to realize the harm you're doing to others. And that's a harsh reality and can sometimes drive people back to using and drinking because it's too much pain. We drank or used to avoid pain our entire lives. And so now we're going through a process that pulls all these feelings out and you got to look at them and deal with them and feel them. So definitely, I think guilt's a big part of going through that transition into not being active in your addiction. Because once you stop using, that's the beginning. It's not the end. Recovery starts when you stop using. Going through detox is not recovery. That's just getting healthy so you don't die because we've done terrible things to our bodies. And so, yeah, guilt's a big emotion that comes in when you start to really deal with the reality of what you've done to those around you. There's a saying, you know, we're a tornado in the lives of those around us. When you're actively using, you have no awareness of that. And so when you stop using and you don't have that crutch anymore, and you're feeling these raw emotions coming in of what you've done to your mother, your wife, your kids, it's terrible. It is a horrible feeling. And that's why you have to have, as Kelly built, a support network around you, a sponsor, other people in recovery that you're accountable to, people who know they're going to see you every week at a meeting because they're the ones that are going to save your life. So, yes, there is guilt, but there's other feelings. And the way around that is to let others in to experience it with you.
You mentioned connection and how important that is. I mean, that's important to anybody at any given time,
right?
Just in day-to-day life.
Yep.
Even more so for somebody in recovery. Mm-hmm. Is that the most important thing you need to have is somebody there that you're going to be able to talk to or that knows what you went through?
Yeah. I can only speak for me, and I can assume there's others like me. Connection for me was the opposite of addiction. I isolated. I could be in a crowded room and I was still alone. I didn't let people in. Nobody knew me, really. I was friendly. I had friends, but it was all superficial. So going into recovery and experiencing true relationships for really the first time in my life, yes, that connection did save my life. But the connection goes two ways, and I had to let them in so that I could get their input. Of all my friends in recovery, because there's about 10 guys that we've been together for about 15 years where we just help each other, yes, we're supportive, but man, it's tough love. It's what I need to hear at the time. It's, hey, get your head out of your butt because, you know, you're acting that way again. I need people in my life to do that. And your spouse can't do that. Your siblings and your parents can't be that person because of those past relationships. So, you know, people who were strangers, who became friends, who became supportive in that way to hold me accountable, that was connection for me. And then you throw on top, you know, you mentioned what's going on. COVID was terrible. We know statistically that overdose rates and use of alcohol and drugs, you know, exploded. It's crazy to see the numbers and how they've increased. So AA and the other 12-step programs adjusted by having virtual meetings. So trying to mimic that connection, which is tough. And you know, people like me, I didn't take well to that. but there's others who thrive on it. So it's just having another tool to connect people.
12 steps have been around for a long time. I think most people have probably heard of 12 steps. Mm-hmm. But explain what it entails.
Really, it's in my third grade understanding of how it works is it gives me self-awareness. It helps me better understand how I work. The first three steps are basically admitting that there's a God and I ain't it. And what I've found after being around a while and being around people with long-term sobriety, that higher power all tends to kind of be the same. It's kind of this, you know, generic God. I've met Muslims and atheists and Jews and Buddhists, and the God, the higher power they all end up with is kind of the same type of thing, which is neat to see. So the dogma around the religions kind of gets washed away, and it's all the spiritual part of it. And then steps 4 and 5 is really making inventory of my good and bad character traits and my role in things that have happened in my life that we talk a lot about resentments. And then 5th step, you share that with your sponsor or another human being just to get it out and under the witness of your higher power, because again, we've turned things over to this higher power. 6 and 7, we really start to look at those character defects and shortcomings. So we kind of list those out, and then we ask our higher power to take them away, knowing that every day they're going to come back to the surface, and then I got to pat them down. 8 and 9, we really look at the wrongs we've done to others, and we make those amends. That's the big thing in the 9th step that's hard to grasp is I make those amends for me. Yes, I may have wronged you, and I feel bad, but you don't want to hear from me. I'm sorry. You just want to see me stop doing that, right? So I go make these amends and to you with the guidance of a sponsor, because the one thing I have to be careful of is like I don't want to hurt you in the process. So having guidance to go through those amends is really important. But that's the main thing, is I've forgiven myself in those things. And then 10, 11, and 12 are what we call the maintenance steps. So 10 is, every day I take a personal inventory of what went well and what went bad. I review those things. I look at how they went. 11, I continue to try to have this connection with higher power. And then 12 is I go help others. So it's a blueprint for living. Those of us in the rooms of AA talk all the time about how we think everybody in the world should go through the 12 steps. Because it's nothing to do with drinking or drugging. It's about making right choices. It's about caring for others. It's about putting others' needs before your own when in the right cases. It's about being selfish and knowing that sometimes I need time for myself. That's how I stay healthy, right? And how to build those boundaries and have relationships. And so there you go. There's the 12 steps.
And getting back to when you said Kelly did things right.
Yeah.
He went through each of those steps.
Oh my gosh.
And continues.
Yes. Yeah. And the cool thing was he lived it out loud. You know, when I'd see him every day in the coffee shop, he'd go, last night we did X, Y, and Z. And we talk about it. And it was cool because I learned things. But what makes him a little unique is he's not afraid to live those experiences out loud, which helps others and makes him feel better. So very important.
And given that Kelly, who shared that he started so young, I mean, he was a kid when he started drinking, mm-hmm. and then which led to, other things as he got older. For him to be able to make those kinds of changes, do you find it even more remarkable, or is that what a lot of people go through?
It's pretty typical, but everybody's different. And one thing that we talk about is how we got here may have been different, but what we experienced along the way was the same. So whether, he spent time in jails and prisons, he spent time in hospitals and sanitariums, but so have others. The degrees of which those things occurred maybe less or more, but what we felt, the pits of remorse and pain that we go through in those experiences are all pretty much the same.
So is that, I'm wondering, what would you say to somebody listening, for example, who may be going through, they know they have a problem, they know somebody that has a problem, mm-hmm. they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
What do you say to somebody like that?
So for those who are struggling, find hope somewhere. Keep looking and don't stop trying. There is a way. You can do it. You can go a day without your drug or drink of choice. It just doesn't feel like it. It's your head playing tricks on you. Because of the way our brains are wired, we remember pleasure. You don't remember pain. So if I think about a piece of chocolate cake, my mouth starts to water and my brain chemistry changes. But if I think about my broken ankle when I was 5, I can't relive that pain. It's the same thing with addiction. If I start thinking about the drink, you know, my mouth starts to water. I can feel the burn of that first drink and the warmth spread out to my belly. And but I can't think of, I can't feel the pain of getting locked up and going to jail for a DUI. I can try to recreate it, but I can't chemically feel it like I can the pleasure. So, you know, your brain's wired against you. So keep searching, whether it's literature or movies or friends or music, but find something hopeful and hold on to it. And then it will start to grow. And, you know, go be around people who are doing what you're afraid to do, which is not drink a drug. It will rub off. You know, we have a saying, stick with the winners. And the winners are the ones who don't drink and drug. So just hang around them. So that's what I would convey to somebody active. Somebody who's living with or has a friend or spouse or sibling who's active, all I can think to tell them is work on yourself. Al-Anon is a great program. Al-Anon is for people who are around others who are actively using. And what Al-Anon teaches you is essentially the 12 steps. It's how to put yourself first. And look, nobody can convince somebody to go get treatment. Unless they want to go, they ain't going. And if they go, they're going to leave. I've seen them AMA. I've seen them elope, as we say. They just decide that they're done and leave. You know, it's easy to become codependent on that person and you feel guilty because you can't help them. But you can't help them. They have to help themselves. So all you can be is an example of what a good life looks like. And the sad truth is, some of those folks that you're watching struggle are going to die. It's the sad truth. But, you know, a program like Al-Anon is going to teach you how to deal with that, how to right-size it, how to put it in its right place. Be the healthiest you can be so that if they do decide to go get help, you can be there to help them.
As Brent mentioned, recovery isn't a quick fix, and it doesn't look the same for everyone. But recovery is possible. And with recovery comes a potential for hope and healing, as Kelly experienced in this particular moment with his children.
When I came into sober living, I decided that I was just going to message them every day, tell them that I love them, and let my actions do the speaking, because talk is cheap. And I don't know, maybe 4 months had went by of me just continuously telling them I loved them every day. And then I think it was sometime in December, I got an I love you back. And it was like, you know.
You knew you were on the right path at that point.
It was a wonderful feeling.
On the next episode of Tell Us Where It Hurts.
I never would imagine that I'd be here a year later. I knew that life would improve, but I couldn't have dreamed for what came about.
If you or anyone you know suffers from a substance use disorder, please call 800-225-HOPE for more information. That's 800-225-4673. Or go to ecommunity.com/Fairbanks. I'd like to thank both Kelly and Brent for sharing their stories. And thank you for being part of our journey as we all become better listeners. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please rate and review the podcast. We love hearing from you. I'm Chris Kirshner, and this has been Tell Us Where It Hurts. Until next time.